Welcome, friends, fans, and colleagues. It's Karen Tate, and it's Wednesday morning here in California. So you know that means that it's Voices of the Sacred Feminine Day. I hope wherever you are, you're doing well. If you're able to shelter in, I hope you're doing that and being creative to pass the time. And if you do have to go to work, I feel bad that you do, but please be safe. I think if anything, we are learning right now, and I've written this on some Facebook posts and also in my my recent newsletter. You know, we are learning who the really important people are in society right now. You know, it's not the rich and famous. You know, it's not the hedge fund manager. It's not the supermodel. It's not the guy who can shoot the most hoops from the furthest away. You know, it's the people that are keeping society running. It's the grocery store clerk who's keeping the shelves stocked. It's the local pharmacy who's staying there selling us medicine. You know, it's, you know, all the many people, you know, cleaning public areas, sewing masks, you know, it's especially our nurses, you know, especially our nurses out there and our teachers and, you know, often the people who are overlooked and undervalued and underpaid. These are the ones that are really important. You know, the people who are delivering our food, the truck drivers who are continuing to stay on the road to keep the grocery store stocked. You know, these are the people we really need. And maybe when we come out on the other side of this, we will remember who were the people that kept society going during this pandemic. So, you know, some food for thought. Anyway, thank you for tuning in with me today, and I have returning to the show Manda Scott. You might remember her name. A few weeks ago, I had her on the show for a totally different topic. She's an incredible researcher and writer. She's also a shaman and an activist. She was on the show a few weeks ago talking about the real life of Boudica and Joan of Arc. And I highly recommend you go listen to those shows because I think what we have learned about Boudica and Joan of Arc is far from what reality is. But you know, that's our educational system, I guess. But anyway, I'm happy to have Manda returning today. She's calling in from the UK, and we certainly appreciate that. Our topic today is conscious evolution. And, you know, last year, Manda sat on the streets with Extinction Rebellion. She canvassed for the Labor Party. She worked her socks off for local resilience networks. And at the start of the year, she launched her own website platform called Accidental Gods, a gateway to conscious evolution, which I think was a turning point for her toward a more full-time occupation. Today we're going to discuss what conscious evolution actually is and why it's so relevant now. We'll discover the difference between this and collective intelligence and how it fits in with integral theory of Ken Wilber and others. Now, some of this might be new to you. Some of it's new to me. So, you know, we'll have her explain all of this. So I want to say to Manda Scott, welcome back to Voices of the Sacred Feminine.
Hi. It's a great pleasure to be back, and thank you. Much easier getting in this time. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. And thank you for calling. Sorry for, you know, any confusion today with the start time of the show, but I'm glad it all worked out.
Yeah, we haven't had our daylight savings time yet, so I'm an hour out on all my calculations with the U.S., but yeah, it's fine. And isn't it different? Because you and I planned this several months ago, and we had no idea that the world was going to be where it is. So are you, you're safe at home in California?
Yes, we are. And, you know, I was just thinking that, Manda, even as recently as our last interview a few weeks ago, I mean, the world has changed so incredibly. You know, we are sheltered in here. I'm beginning to think this was the plan of the universe a year ago when, you know, our lives changed so drastically. My husband fell and had the head injury, and we lost our jobs, and we ended up moving from Venice Beach, California. We'd have been in the thick of it. It would have been very hard to shelter in place there because people are so close together and living on top of one another. So I'm so grateful to be up in the mountains, and, you know, we can go for days without seeing a soul. So we're here and we're safe. But what about you? What's it like over there in the UK? We don't hear very much in the news.
No. Well, we went into lockdown 2 days ago, so we're only allowed to go to get absolute essentials from the shops. To eat, or you know, to get to hospital, basically, at pharmacies and food stores and kind of animal feed stores are still open, and technically everywhere else is shut. Although, because like you, we live in quite a rural area, we're allowed to have exercise once a day, provided we keep 3 meters from anybody else. But people are, you know, there's pictures on the news tonight of the tube trains, because the government, in its wisdom, has decided to cut the number of trains, so the people who do have to get to work, who are in essential industries, are all cramming on the same trains. It's like if they had sat down and designed how to make the worst possible set of mistakes in this crisis, this government does seem to be managing to make all of them. Because this is the government that spent the first 10 days when we knew that the virus was in this country deciding that herd immunity was a better idea, and the guy who's actually running the country, our equivalent of Steve Bannon, is on record allegedly having said, you know, if a few elderly die, that's okay. And then somebody did the actual arithmetic and realized that the way they were going, it was going to be hundreds of thousands dead, and they realized that probably wasn't going to be a very good look. So they decided to do stuff, but they're still, it's too little, too late each time. So it's kind of interesting.
Well,
but again, I'm very glad we're in the country, and I'm really glad because accidental gods, I spent all of last year, I wasn't writing a book. I'm supposed to be writing a book, and it just didn't happen because I had, in my shamanic world, I'm a shamanic practitioner. I would never say that I was a shaman. But still, I work, my spiritual path is shamanic. I have a shamanic imperative, and I was being driven to get this done by the winter solstice of 2019, so, you know, quarter of a year ago. And I had no idea why. And my partner, who makes the website and does all the tech stuff, and she was saying, hey, we're not ready. We're just not going to be ready. And all the back end of last year, I was going, we just have to be. It has to be out by the solstice. And we'd have these bizarre late-night conversations. She'd go, but why? And I don't know, but it just does. And now, you know, we're at the equinox, one quarter cycle of the year on, and it's absolutely obvious why it needed to come out. So a bit like you, it feels as if the gods were driving this, and that's one of the things, because it's quite easy to despair watching, I don't know about you, but the panic buying. People have been having actual physical fights over toilet paper. And you just think, this is not consciously evolved, people. It's not even close to being consciously evolved. And I despair at humanity. But then I think a lot of my shamanic dreaming students, a lot of my accidental god students now are reporting things that feel as if the universe is helping us. However we define the universe, it feels as if we're being helped on the way. And it gives me hope that the evolution might be possible when what I'm seeing occasionally in my Twitter feed leaves me in desperate despair, actually.
Well, you know, I agree with you, actually, and I'm not surprised we agree. You know, the last newsletter I put out, it was actually titled The Benefits of Plague, and Trump, because, you know, we've heard some crazy things about your prime minister. You know, I sometimes think maybe he's almost as bad as Trump. And it's been crazy here. I mean, we have Republicans actually saying that they don't mind dying to start the economy again. You know, Trump wants to not keep the shelter-in-place thing going because it's hurting business. At Easter, wants people to go back to work. And, you know, he's talking to hedge fund managers and people like that because, you know, they can't stand to lose a buck. But of course they'll shelter in and it'll be their employees that'll have to, go to work and really make the risks to keep them rich. I do believe the universe, even this pandemic, honestly, you know, with what I said when I opened the show, you know, I feel like we're seeing who's really important and who, who are just the maniacs out there. And I think when this is past us, I don't think we're going to forget this, quite frankly. And I would like to think that things will shift, you know, consciousness will shift. And, we see that, the little guy driving the truck or, keeping the shelves stocked in the grocery store, you know, who are making minimum wage with no benefits, we'll remember how vital they were to our survival. And, you know, we won't undervalue them and make sure they get paid a living wage and that sort of thing. I mean, we're seeing the evils of capitalism, I think, too. There was just an article in the paper today that Trump wants to give some pharmaceutical company by the name of Gilead, which is crazy because that's the city in The Handmaid's Tale. Wants to give Gilead Pharmaceuticals, special preference on a coronavirus drug. So, you know, they're looking at cashing in, and so that they can be the ones to charge any price, to cure the virus. And it's just insane. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, people will see the evils of capitalism here. You know, it won't be any doubt in their mind anymore. I don't know. Maybe I'm overstating this. Maybe it's wishful thinking, but the behavior of our so-called leaders, at least from, when I look at Trump, he has a daily briefing and he gets up there and he lies every day. Meanwhile, it's governors like the New York governor and the California governor, even though they're behind the eight ball and the government squandered, weeks that they could have prepped. I just feel so glad I'm living in a blue state where the Democrat, we have a Democratic governor who's sane.
It's very interesting because I think we'll get onto conscious evolution in a minute, but I think it would be a criminal catastrophe if we allowed ourselves to sleepwalk back into business as usual as this passes over. But you know, there's the question of, so when I started Accidental Gods, the first podcast I did was outlining the premise, and one of the things that I said was, you know, we are a highly complex system, and the Ilya Prigozhin, who was a Nobel Prize winning physicist, he got his Nobel Prize for his work on complexity, and he said that any system reaches a point of maximal complexity, after which its timeline bifurcates. So there are two options. One is it descends into chaos and extinction, and the other is it emerges and self-organizes into a new system, and the point is that the new system is utterly unpredictable from the perspective of the old system. If you can predict it, it isn't a new system. It's just an iteration of the old system. And I said, we are a very complex system. We are communicating now around the globe with more orders of magnitude, more complexity than has ever been seen in the history of consciousness in the entire evolution of this planet. So billions of years, the level of complexity of the ways that we are intercommunicating. And this was, you know, I recorded this in December. So that was before the complexity. I don't know about you, but my email has just gone completely crazy. I am being inundated with more connections than I have ever seen. So we're at maximal complexity, and we are heading either for extinction or emergence into a new system. And the things that are likely to push us are hitting climate tipping points, hitting ecological tipping points, which I think are happening even faster, or human-made crises like global war, antibiotic resistance, or a global pandemic. And each of these has been predicted, absolutely. A friend of mine whose daughter is a medic in the NHS said they war-gamed a pandemic back in 2016 and discovered that they needed more ventilators. And guess what? It was a right-wing government, so they didn't bother getting more ventilators because they don't like the fact that we have a national health service. And now they're having to pay people to make ventilators very quickly. I also heard that some people war-gamed a pandemic in your country just after Trump was elected and before he disbanded the pandemic unit. And by month five, they had nationalized the health service. Now, obviously, it's probably that wasn't the people who are currently in charge. But I think the thing that the likes of Trump and the people going, oh, I don't mind dying, don't get is this is three times more infectious than flu. And that doesn't sound very much. Flu, if I get flu and I go out wandering in the general population, I will infect between 1.3 and 1.4 other people. Obviously, there is no such thing as 0.4 of a person. But on average, that's my infection rate. If those 1.3, 1.4 people go on and infect another 1.4 and another 1.4, and you do that 10 times, so 10 orders out, that's 14 people. With this, the infection rate seems to be between 3 and 4. So if we go for the lower edge of that and we go for 3, if I get it, I go out, I infect 3 people, they go out, they infect 9 people, they go out, they infect 27 people. 3 to the power of 10 is 59,000. And
right.
The mortality rate is highly variable, and it's anywhere between 5 and 10%. So that's anywhere between 2,500 and 5,000 people dead because I chose to go out and wander amongst the community. It's orders of magnitude more than what we are used to seeing. And I don't think those numbers are kind of at the level that we need them.
Well, and I don't know if you have crazies there in the UK like we have here, but the religious right, the preachers are telling people to come to church and pray and, you know, kind of like their pray away the gay thing. The beaches in Florida were open. I don't think they started taking this seriously until some of the senators in Congress were quarantined or came down with it, you know. And then suddenly it's real. I mean, that is so typical of Republicans, you know, because they have no empathy until it affects them directly. You know, I mean, I've seen it over and over and over again. And our president, you know, he's just the biggest poster child for having no empathy, or morality or common sense either, you know. I'm glad we're talking about this today. We didn't know when we booked it how relevant it would be. Let's just... let's start at the beginning here. And your website platform is called Accidental Gods. What does that mean?
Why do we call it Accidental Gods? Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So because we are the generational era. So the people alive now, the boomers, the Generation X, the generation what you call Z, we would call Z. The millennials, those of us alive today, we are the generational era that has given ourselves the power of species-level extinction, which has not been, there has never been a species on the planet before that could, in and of itself, wipe out both itself and most of the other living beings. The last time, there have been 5 mass extinctions, and they've all been accidental. They've all been as a result of an external shock. This is us. And there's a journalist over here called George Monbiot who calls this the first mass extermination because it's deliberate. And so most of us didn't grow up thinking that we were going to... Basically, we have the power of God now. But we didn't imagine that we would have, and we didn't particularly want it. But we have it. So we were hunting around for an aim, I have to say. It took us, I think it was about September, and we'd been planning this since the solstice of 2018. And I was up the hill just saying, you know, I do my morning ceremony on the hill at the back of our house, and it's where I go up and I do a lot of my kind of connecting with the world insofar as I can. And I was just, we need a name for this. We need a name. And Accidental God had been the working title of my last book, which is currently called A Treachery of Spies. Accidental God lasted all the way down the line until it hit the marketing department, who said, no, you can't call it that. And so the editors went off, and for the first time, actually, in the history of my I've published 16 novels, and I think three of them have had the title that I actually wanted. The working title has continued on to be the final title, and usually it gets to marketing, and they go, no, you can't do that. And then we hit panic, because this is about 3 weeks before publication, and try to think of a new title, and it's usually crap. And this one, actually, A Treachery of Spies, that's rather clever. I was quite impressed with that. So Accidental God was gone, and I was up the hill going, we need a name. We need a name that encompasses where we are in a way that makes sense. And what I got was, you've already got a name. No, I don't think we have, actually. It's not really very good. And then I realized that that's what they meant. And it fitted perfectly, because this is the moment. We have choice and we have agency to be godlike. And if we can move ourselves through that Pergazine portal to a new evolutionary phase, then that will have been a godlike act in terms of how we perceive. You know, we could go down the rabbit hole of what is a god as opposed to what is the all that is. If anybody's interested in that, I did a really interesting podcast with a lady rabbi who is also the only person. She set up a school for Jewish priestesses, the Kohenet Institute. So she's the only Jewish high priestess for the last 2,500 years. And she's lovely. And she and I explored the difference between gods and the all that is in quite a lot of depth in that podcast. But if we take the word God to be those who can exert powers that transcend the limitations of our existing physical world, then creating conscious evolution will be a godlike act, as will exterminating ourselves and everything else. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, it absolutely does. And the woman you just described, I believe I've interviewed her here on the show. The name is not coming to the fore.
Jill
do you
Hammer.
Recall?
Yes, Rabbi Jill.
Say it
Jill
again?
Hammer. Jill with a J.
Okay.
Hammer.
Hammer. Maybe so. I'm going to have to go back and look at the records, but that sounds very familiar. And, well, it does. It makes perfect sense, you know, because we do have so much power in our hands right now. And, you know, we're kind of at the tip of a knife, you know, which way do we go? Do we use this power for good? Or do we, you know, or do we, the people calling the shots, just continue their folly and foolishness, and you know, not make the right decisions for the long term? And you know, it just feels like everything in this world right now, by the people who are in charge, are about short-term profits. That's the only thing they seem to care about, or power. You know, if it's religion, it's about power over. And you know, it's really coming to this tipping point. So, talk a little bit, Manda, about this this collective intelligence that you've mentioned. What's the difference between you know, I guess what we're doing and collective intelligence?
So I think I take a little bit of a step back and look at what conscious evolution is, because I think it's worth contrasting the two. So So up until now, our understanding of evolution has been, those of us who believe that evolution is a thing, has been that there are random mutations in DNA which create differences in phenotypes, so differences in the way that we function. Some of those differences in phenotype are advantageous within the ecological niche that we inhabit, and if they are, then they give a selective advantage which is passed to the next generation, and provided it kind of stands the stress testing of the ecological niche, it becomes a pattern of the species. So it takes a long time. So if I'm an antelope with quite a long neck, and I stretch up and I've got a slightly longer neck, and that lets me get to leaves further up the trees, and that gives me an advantage, many, many, many generations later, I turn into a giraffe. But it's a very slow process. We are now at the point where so evolution happens under moments of intense pressure, because you need that intense pressure to give the selective advantage to whatever has got that tweak to their DNA. So my thesis, or let's say the thesis of those who are promoting conscious evolution, because I'm hardly alone in this, is that this is a moment of really very intense pressure. And we were thinking this before the pandemic started. So now it's very, very intense pressure. And this is one of the things, just to take a slight sidestep, why I truly don't understand why the men, mostly it's men, and mostly it's white men, in power, are making such short-term decisions. Because it's not like, 100 years ago, you could make short-term decisions and you create a Second World War and it's not very good. Now, you take short-term decisions, and we probably have a window of about 10 years before we hit climate and ecological tipping points that are actually irreversible for everybody. And it, this is not, and just the fact that they've managed to hoard a little bit more in their hedge funds between now and then isn't actually going to cut it. I think that's one of the things we're seeing now, certainly in our shops, is it doesn't matter how much money you've got. If the last roll of toilet paper has gone, you can't buy it. It doesn't matter how much money you've got. It's not worth anything. It's just an idea. What's worth, we're all planting stuff like fury, because if people don't get out and actually plant stuff this spring, there will be no crops in the autumn, and the pandemic will not seem like the worst issue. The worst issue will be there is no food. So, it's the short-termism of that leaves me gobsmacked. Anyway, so conscious evolution requires intense pressure. Evolution requires intense pressure. We are under extraordinarily intense pressure, and we don't really want it to get any worse. So we don't have time then to have that iteration down the generations of DNA to see what we might evolve from this pressure, like not being so stupid as to fight in the shops. Or I'm thinking the pastors who are calling everybody into churches, that's quite Darwinian. They won't survive long. So then there won't be more pastors to call people into churches. But we haven't actually got time for that to progress down the generations, because we're in a very, very tight window. But what I and a lot of others believe is that we are at the point of consciousness, both in our connectivity, because if we are functioning as a species, as a hyper-connected single organism, then if each of us is a node in that, each of us is much more connected than has ever been the case in the history of consciousness. Add to that the fact that what we might call psychotechnologies, the ability to actually shift the way our minds work, are more advanced than they have ever been. They will undoubtedly advance further, but they are linked to the advances in our understanding of neuroscience. And that is, we know more this year than the sum total of all that has ever been known. By next year, we will again know more than the sum total of everything that has ever been known about neuroscience, about how our brains work. And so that's the definition of exponential growth. So neuroscience and psychotechnology are both in exponential growth, and that gives us access to ways of molding and modeling our consciousness that we have never had before in the history of humanity. And so we have the pressure, we have the motive, and we have the means, to move towards conscious evolution, to consciously choose to evolve our own mind. And then all we have to do is work out how to do it. And so what I did last year, having had the kind of instruction, I sat with the fire in the winter solstice of 2018, so two winter solstices, not last one, but the one before. And I was feeling quite smug, because when I sit with the fire, I kind of review the past year, and I look at the future year. And I was feeling pretty cool, because I'd been teaching my shamanic work for nearly 20 years, and I got the first group who started with me back in early 2000, had finally gone around the wheel. It had taken a long time, but they'd got there. And nine of them, out of the hundreds that started way back, had finally got around. And I was thinking that was super cool. And I sat with the fire, and basically what came was, nine people in two decades is not going to come. You have to start teaching at scale. And I couldn't. I don't know how. Because as for me, shamanic practice is, it's either a very old, very powerful, very intricate system that requires a lot of personal growth to take it on board, or you can learn it in a weekend. And it isn't both. It cannot be both. And if it is the former, which obviously I believe, or I wouldn't waste everybody's time and money teaching it, then there are safety concerns in teaching it, and I will not teach more than 15 to 20 people at one go, and that's not what you call teaching at scale. So I was instructed to teach at scale, and I was given two visions. And one was of me in the States teaching really quite a large number of people, talking from a stage like a kind of TED talk. And the other one was of the globe, the Earth, as seen from space, that kind of blue pearl against the blackness of space. And all around it was a very, very hyper-complex web of light that was either, when I first saw it was the color of moonlight, and then I've seen it again, the color of sunlight. It depends what time of day the vision is coming. And at every point where the threads cross over, there's a node of consciousness. And some of those nodes are human, and most of them aren't. And in working with that vision to work out what it meant, because in the beginning it was just there, and I had no idea. I didn't know any of this. I hadn't gone into it at all. But my understanding now, my felt sense, is that we need to get to a point where each of us as individuals has learned how to reconnect with the web of life, with the natural world, with the more than human world, whatever you like to call it, so that we can go up the hill and stand open. There was a Native American phrase called the hollow bone. We need to become the hollow bones who can be those connected parts that can connect. I can connect to the hawk, the red kite above the hill. I can connect to the tree. I can connect to the hill itself. I can connect to the river. I can connect to a deer in the woods a couple of miles away. That if I can get to the point where I can make those connections again, because we were once, most humanity evolved in context. We've chosen to step away from it. It's not impossible to get it back, it just takes work. If we can do that, if we can do the internal work, because if I'm going to ask for help, which is what I think we need to do, then it matters that I hear answers that are not contaminated by my ego or my judgment of myself or others or my projections, and heaven knows shamanic practice is loaded with projections, or my fears. So, because I think in the end, a lot of the conscious evolution people think that if we just meditate for another 1,000 hours, or philosophize a bit more deeply and think a little bit more powerfully, or if we implant a nanochip in our brain, God help us, then we'll achieve conscious evolution. It's all about thinking. And I really believe that no problem is solved from the mindset that created it. We will not get where we need to go from here. We need to make a shift that is a paradigm, beyond a paradigm shift. We need to make that emergence from complexity that Prigogine talked about. And it has to be that one of the biggest and most obvious examples of a complex system from which emergence occurs on a regular basis is that of a caterpillar that munches its way through a bunch of leaves, gets to the point where it's satin full, spins its cocoon, and then dissolves. A chrysalis is a little protective shell around a seed of DNA. There is nothing of the caterpillar left. And then little imaginal cells grow up, and in the beginning they're attacked as being foreign and destroyed. But more grow and more grow, and they clump together to make little imaginal islands, and eventually the little imaginal islands grow together, and they become a butterfly or a moth, and it emerges from the chrysalis. And if you came from Mars and walked up and I handed you a chrysalis, if you had never seen a butterfly and did not know that sequence, I really don't believe that you would predict that coming out of, if you saw the caterpillar, saw it spin its little cocoon, turn itself into a chrysalis, I don't think a butterfly would be top of your list of things that you would predict. So a butterfly is a emergence from the complex system. We need to emerge, and I think we cannot do that alone. Our whole, the reason we're in, the problem that we're in is that we keep thinking that we have all the answers, and we don't. But I think that the web of consciousness does. If we can get to the point where we can take our place in these nodes and make the connection and be coherent, then we can ask for help. We can stand there in the confidence of knowing that we are the right people in the right place at the right time and say, what do you need me to do? What do you need of me in this moment now? And have the flexibility to do it. And so this is the fourth stage in what I'm trying to teach, is that when we get to that point, when we have practiced enough, when we understand how to hear the answers that come, then we need to let go of everything that we believe to be true, which is the, if you want to go into it, Donella Meadows' top of her list of leverage points in any system, which I find quite exciting, but that's because I'm a complexity system geek. So if that's not of interest to your listeners, we won't go there. But we do need to take that empty-handed leap into the void. If we can do all of that, then I think we stand a good chance of conscious evolution. And I don't think it takes all of us, but I think it takes a critical mass of us, and I don't know what that critical mass is. Gurdjieff said it only takes 200 genuinely enlightened people to transform the Earth, but he might be wrong. I don't know. So I'm hoping that we'll get, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people to do this so that we get a critical mass, because it's the energy as much as anything else of what we're doing. I'll go on to you asked in a bit. Sorry, I've been talking a long time. You want to say something? Go.
Well, no. It's been interesting, and it's a complex subject. So it's, you know, that's why I let you, gave you your head to go ahead and explain it. But I guess I wonder though. A couple things. I was just reading an article about the idea that Saturn is entering Aquarius for 2 years. So we will have these Aquarian values, you know, we will be entering maybe this age of Aquarius that we've talked about, mm-hmm. we've been waiting for decades. You know, I wonder if that helps us shift. Because I think help is coming from unexpected sources. You know, there's that. You know, there's Saturn entering Aquarius. I actually think the pandemic and people like Trump, are helping push our psyches forward into a more, empathetic, nurturing, feminine, if you will, way of thinking and being, and because we're under such pressure, it's kind of like change or die, because obviously what has been happening is no longer going to continue to work, you know, indefinitely. But I guess I just wonder, how do you, you know, what you just described, do you believe needs to happen? How does that happen? Because you're talking about taking a leap of consciousness, and I don't know, maybe the people, or you know, maybe there are enough people already in place to be able to make that leap. Maybe the leap is not as difficult as you're describing. You know, maybe some of us are almost there anyway. I don't know. How does it happen, I guess, is my question.
Well, the honest answer is I don't know. I am basically following, where I'm sent by that whichever it is that sends stuff. But what we've only been running 2.5 months. We have a steady stream of people signing up, and so what I did was I spent the whole of last year. That was my question. When it became apparent that this is what I needed to do, what you have asked was exactly what I asked. And over the past year, with doing the asking and the listening and the trying to be attentive, and I would say this is always a work in progress. But at the moment, what I was shown was how to help people to do this. That we need to do the connecting to the natural world, and the connecting to ourselves needs to happen in parallel. And I was given a very structured way of helping people to do this, and at the moment it seems to be working. We've got students now who've been doing this for 11 weeks, which isn't very long, but we're seeing extraordinary levels of connection. And these are ordinary people, your mothers with 3 kids, or people who until 2 days ago had a full-time job, and probably even still do, because we've got quite a lot of doctors and medical personnel in this. So, because you're right, we can't do it by just thinking it's a nice idea. We do have to commit to some level of personal work, but it's not huge in the beginning. I spent ages studying behavior and studying how habits are formed so that I could write a workbook of, okay, we want to build some good habits. We want to build the habit of doing this work once a day, doing some kind of mindful contemplation. How do we build that? Because if you sit down on the 1st of January and decide you're going to meditate for an hour every day, by the 1st of February, you won't be doing it anymore. It just doesn't happen. So how can we build it? So I've got, that's what Accidental Gods is a structured way of helping people to do this. Because my fear is, I hear you, that Trump and that the empathy, the level of empathy and connectivity and community that we are seeing around the world is astonishing. But so is the level. I read just before we came online that Trump's approval ratings are at an all-time high, which leaves me just gobsmacked. But it's the same over here. People think that our Prime Minister is doing a jolly good job, and the rest of us who are capable of lucid thought think that it's an utter catastrophe, and that's the nicest and kindest word that I can say on live radio. So it is possible that we emerge from this into a better world, but only if we all actually make it happen. And for me, that making it happen starts on an energetic level. I've been really putting stuff out, videos and audio files and podcasts, in the last couple of weeks of, okay, guys, so at the moment, look at what's in your heart space. And we have a choice. Every moment of the day, we either add to the weight of fear and dread and despondency and possible gloom and, oh God, everything's going to horrible places, or we choose to generate awe and wonder and gratitude and joy and hope and compassion. And that doesn't mean that we don't feel the fear, but it means that we have a choice of how we feel, and we can bring to bear on that the neuroscience, the head in plasticity, that what fires together wires together, and our understanding of that, and the HeartMath Institute work of how can you change your physiology by choice. We have these tools now that we didn't have even 5 years ago. This pandemic, if it had happened 10 years ago, you and I would not be having this conversation. Facebook had barely got off the ground. Zoom did not exist. The connectivity that we're seeing now, the ability, I've been on more Zoom calls in the last 2 weeks than the whole of the rest of my life, of really concerned people from politics to spirituality to teaching people how to do exactly what you just asked in Zoom calls. And we can do this now, but it does take people who want to do it and people who are prepared to do the work,
right,
and not sit back and expect that it's just going to happen.
Right. Well, and, I would hope my listeners, myself as well, I will probably go to your Accidental Gods website and check that out. We're all looking for the path, and and because obviously the people with the loudest voices, you know, I don't think have the answers. But let's get a little bit into you know, Ken Wilber and integral theory. Tell listeners how that who he is, what is integral theory, and how does it fit into what we're talking about today.
Because you and I talked about questions that might be interesting a couple of months ago, and I was really interested in Ken Wilber back then, and now I'm not. Okay, so Ken Wilber, he's American. He's a philosopher, a social philosopher, and he took some ideas that were around but buried quite deep in academic files, and he made them highly popular as integral theory. And integral theory, at its base, considers that there is a spiral of personal evolution, and that it maps onto that every person goes through this spiral, but that humanity itself has gone through this spiral from back in Paleolithic times. It starts off, I think, with the magical. Cave dwellers painting on the walls and assuming that the paintings conferred some kind of magical ability. And actually, so I'll tell you why I don't know Ken Wilber in a minute. And then we move up and we get, and he gives everything colors, and it starts off with red. So the magical is red, and then the mythical is amber. And then we get to the modern world, which is modernity, which stepped out of the Enlightenment, where we no longer believe, most of us, that God defines what we do, and instead we rely on science, and we have a very structured world. It's very Cartesian, where it's complicated rather than complex. So everything is reducible to its lowest common denominator, and if you understand the lowest common denominators well enough, you can change everything. Part of the issue with everything from modern medicine to the economy to the whole of the way that they're structuring this pandemic is that people who live in the modern mindset haven't got their heads around the fact that complexity is different to complicated, and that you cannot treat things as if they were little bits of code. You can just pull out the bit of broken code and put in a bit that isn't broken. So, and then he goes up to postmodern and then metamodern, although that's, I think, not in his nomenclature. He calls it something else. And as you ascend up this spiral, you become more evolved. Each level takes in all of the ones before it. And then there's a kind of transcendent space, and he gives it the color teal, which, as far as I can tell, maps onto a consciously evolved being. And the bit that really I did like and still like about Ken Wilber's work is that he's created a kind of quadrant where there's the I and the we, so the internal and the collective, and it maps with, my brain has just completely switched off, internal and external. Okay, I can't remember. Sorry, Kate, my brain has just gone completely mad. But the other thing that's moderately good is that he has a phrase that encompasses what we need to do, which is wake up, grow up, clean up, and show up. And the cleanup was added quite recently. In the beginning, it was wake up, grow up, show up. And then he's added cleanup. So it's wake up, grow up, clean up, show up. And when I was investigating Wilber in the beginning, that was the bit that struck me was, yeah, that's useful, provided we agree on what waking up and growing up involves. And where I'm beginning quite a lot to diverge, because I look back at the First Nations people, and I don't know that we have evolved in a way that's useful at all from that. So the fact that he has magical and mythical right down at the bottom of his kind of personal and collective evolutionary tree, I am finding extremely problematic. So one of the things I'm hoping to do in the podcast, or at least I was before we hit the global pandemic, was to find somebody who really understood this, but was prepared to critique it from standing with one foot inside and one foot outside, because it seems that a lot of, when I start talking to people who are into this, it starts to feel almost cultish. They are very into it, or they're very not into it.
Gotcha.
And I'd like to find balance and can see both sides of that. So I think the wake up, grow up, clean up, show up is really useful, and the rest I'm less convinced is useful anymore.
Okay. Well, Manda, believe it or not, 50 minutes have gone by.
Oh, no.
And
oh, no.
I know. 50 minutes have already gone by, and I believe what you've been sharing is important, and you know, multi-layered, and you've given us so much to think about, but we're starting to run out of time here. So I want to give you the opportunity, kind of just wrap this up. I mean, is there anything you haven't said about this that that you think needs to be said for a fuller understanding?
No, I okay. So there's one thing. Well, first of all, there's a podcast, and if this interests you at all, please, it's accidentalgods.life. So it's not .com or .co.uk or any of those. It's .life. And we did end up so at the moment you join for £1. For 2 weeks, and the pound is now worth about 0.5 of a cent, as far as I can tell. We seem to have crashed against the dollar. But then there was a fee. But what we've done is, because we discovered if we gave it away, if people hadn't got any kind of investment, they didn't engage. And we need people to engage. I am serious about this. I think conscious evolution is possible. I think it can be done. I thought we had a 5 or 10 year time frame. Now I think that time frame might be much, much shorter. So if anybody is interested, it isn't going to take huge amounts out of your life. We have quite a lot of people from the States and Canada. I'd love for there to be small local groups developing like there are in the UK. It's just that you guys are much more spread out than we are. But the key is, if anybody wants to join and the finance is an issue, you just write to us and we will make it go away by magic. So the money was not the point, other than we would like it at least to pay for itself, and all of our subscriptions to the various bits of tech are all in dollars, and as we said, the pound is no longer worth anything against the dollar. But other than that, we just want people to engage. So if you are interested and you want to join and the money's a problem, then don't let that be a bar to coming on in. And I would love it if some of your listeners were interested, just because we need critical mass of people, and I don't know what that number is, but I genuinely believe that we are getting so much help with this that I think there, whatever it is out there that helps us, feels to me like it's just holding this door open for us to walk through, and it isn't complicated.
No, I know what you mean by that. I mean, and if someone hasn't felt that, it might be a little bit hard to understand. But you know, I feel like some of us have been being moved around like chess pieces in the last couple years, and we're in this kind of flow that maybe we didn't even understand or realize existed, or I don't know. I don't know. I don't even have the words for it. But some of us, I think, have definitely been feeling this. Well, Manda, I appreciate you offering this direction. I know a lot of people are looking for a direction to go in. They want to help be that 100th monkey. You know, be a part of that morphic feel that we've been talking about for so long. They want to be an active participant in their own evolution and the evolution of the planet, but they just didn't know where to go or how to do it. And making lemonade of lemons with so many of us sheltered in and trying to figure out how we're going to pass the time, maybe that's also a blessing. Gives people an opportunity to look into things like you're suggesting with your accidental gods dot life, right? Accidentalgods.life website.
Yeah, and the podcast is just
okay.
Accidental Gods. People are interested, just have a listen to the podcast and see where I more or less say what I've said here, but more coherently, and see does it feel like it's useful.
Right, right, right. I guess that about does it for us for now. I think really to understand it more fully or get more information, they really would have to go to Accidental Gods. But, you know, I appreciate you giving us this, you know, this kind of crash course, you know, because I know we're seeing all the crazies out there. But I don't know, I have to believe in my heart that, you know, there's more people that are more fully conscious than the ones we just see on the television, you know. You know, I have to believe that there's more of us than there are of them. And, you know, we're just too busy maybe doing more productive things than you know, going to church during a pandemic and spreading the disease, you know. Well, all right, Manda, I appreciate you, you know, you taking the time to be with the listeners again. And, wow, I mean, I feel like you're one of the ones out there doing some incredible work to try to help us, you know, evolve as human beings, you know, even though we don't really know what that looks like. Exactly yet, but you know, hopefully we will all find out.
I hope so. Yes. Thank you so much for giving me the space and the time, and I hope you all stay safe over there.
Yes, exactly the same for you. And, you know, keep in touch, and you may actually hear from me. I do want to look a little bit more into this myself because I do have the time now, too. And I've been trying to figure out, you know, how to put my energy, in, you know, to the best possible use. And this is definitely something I'm going to consider as well. Thank you very much, Manda. Let's keep in touch, and if anything comes up that you feel like we need to talk about, just pop me an email, and we'll have another chat, okay?
Yes, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Same to you. And listeners, before I go for now, I just want to play for you something from a review of Joe Carson's book, Celebrate Wildness. Please stay tuned.
This is from Jonathan Nightshade, a traditional craft practitioner and researcher, writing about Joe Carson's book, Celebrate Wildness, Magic, Mirth, and Love on the Ferrotheria Path. I love this book, how special this work is and how appreciated. As someone who was young in the 1970s and through the years only found snippets of information on Ferrotheria, one of the first modern pagan paths, this book comes as an artistic revelation of the core practices of the way of the goddess and gods reborn for the next age of the divine maiden. She has clearly introduced the historical background, philosophy, and ritual practices of the joyous wilderness mysteries of the fairy faith, illuminated by the marvelous pagan art of Ferrotheria's founder, Fred Adams. I was very pleased that the high-quality production of this oversized volume makes it a collectible work of art, as well as a testament to the visionary philosophy of Fred Adams. I feel blessed that I received a copy. I will treasure it and look forward to the next book for more of the deep philosophy and ritual practice of Ferrotheria.
Celebrate Wildness is a dense, art book quality hardcover book. You can get it for just $45 from the Ferrotheria website at ferrotheria.org. That's ferrotheria.org.
So just to clarify, Joe Carson's lovely book, Celebrate Wildness, is available only at ferrotheria.org, ferrotheria.org. And of course, you know, we were just talking about you know, Amanda Scott's Accidental Gods website, While We All Have Time, I would encourage you to go there, look at that, see if it resonates with you. Also, there are other options out there if you are looking for something to pass the time, to be creative. If you go to Zoom.com, they are offering classes for free on how to use Zoom. Just go to Zoom.com. There are actually a lot of free classes there, which help us maybe become better versed in the technology so that we can all stay connected, especially during this sheltering in time. And also there's the Noetic Institute is offering a lot of very valuable and free classes. I know they had one yesterday on harvesting wisdom. There's one coming up Friday on health and well-being. So please go to the noeticsciences.com and look at all they have there that you can tune into online, and they're absolutely free. A friend of mine was also telling me about the great courses that are available. Now, this might cost about $5, I think, $5 or $8, and I'm not absolutely sure about that. It could even be free. But these wonderful college-level classes are available on great courses, and I know one way you can get them, get access to them, is if you're an Amazon Prime member. So you might want to look into that. As a matter of fact, it came to my attention, I mean, many of you may already know about it, but it came to my attention just in the last few days when a friend of mine was talking to me about this 20-part class, I believe, she might have said, from Great Courses. She took on the bubonic plague, the Black Plague. And you might think, oh, God, that was such a morbid thing to be talking about during a pandemic. But actually, what came out of that conversation are the very many benefits that were a result of the world going through the Black Plague. I'll try to remember. I mean, some of them were people got healthier. There was an end to feudalism. There was this resurgence of freedom of thought. Humanism came out of it. I'm trying to think of all the other things, but the point is that with something as catastrophic as the Black Plague, it really pushed humanity forward. It advanced humanity forward, and that was part of my last newsletter, you know, the kind of posing the question, will this pandemic do the same thing for us? I mean, we can't vision, as Amanda said, you know, we can't always vision what's on the other side of things, but some of the things we speculated about was certainly after this, more people will have to value science. I mean, come on. You know, we talked about the fact that the people who had been marginalized and undervalued, we are seeing every day how much we rely on them. And will our society then reward them? You know, from the standpoint of, you know, will they have to continue to be a gig economy with no benefits? You know, can't we realize that they deserve better than minimum wage and no benefits, because we did rely on them so much during this pandemic, and we need to have an adjustment of that kind on the other end. You know, why does the hedge fund manager or the supermodel or the basketball player or the football player make these obscene amounts of money when they really contribute very little to society when you think about it? You know, when the teacher or the nurse or the truck driver you know, or the clerk that's, you know, you couldn't buy your groceries without them there, stocking the shelves and, you know, those sorts of things. You know, the people cooking the food, you know, for delivery. You know, these people who, you know, we're low on the totem pole, so to speak. You know, waitresses, you know, working for tips, you know, this kind of thing. You know, without these people right now, you know, risking their lives, staying out there, keeping society running, think how much worse this would all be. You know, it's not the hedge fund manager we need, or the supermodel, or the basketball player, or the football player. You know, they're just diversions. You know, they, you know, it's the people, you know, picking the food, you know, that we need to, you know, to feed ourselves. I think you get it. I don't need to keep belaboring the point, but, you know, maybe this pandemic will teach us that, you know, this idea of globalization has not been the best possible thing. You know, we've lost all of our manufacturing here in the United States, and it makes it very hard for us to ramp up and create anything for ourselves. You know, we've lost our unions. So I don't know. I think on the other side of this, we're going to be rethinking our values. You know, we're going to have to shift into something that looks totally different from the way we're living right now, because we are seeing very clearly where we're lacking, who we need, and, you know, what we truly, I think, need to value. So anyway, if you want to read my article, I do have it posted on Facebook. You can always email me at KarenTate108@yahoo.com. I will send you a link. Or better yet, go to my website, KarenTate.net. And from KarenTate.net, you can connect to the radio show here and find the show page to click the follow button. You can also sign up for the newsletter and read some of these past articles. My article before this one about the benefits of plague and Trump was, it posed the question, are your shackles showing? You know, a little edgy, but, you know, I'm really not one to sugarcoat things. So anyway, I want to thank you all for tuning in. I appreciate your email saying that the show has been keeping you sane during these crazy days. And next Wednesday, April Fool's Day, yes, next Wednesday is April 1st, I will have Monette Chilson with me. And we're going to be talking about reclaiming Lilith, reclaiming ourselves, how a lost archetype of feminine power can return us to wholeness. So that is next week. And I will have a show every Wednesday in April. And on April 10th is my special show where I bring you another chapter from my book, Goddess Calling, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. So that will be April 10th. And there'll be a meditation that follows that as well. So please stay safe, stay sheltered in. Please don't listen to the news too much. It'll drive you crazy. Please try to find creative outlets and take advantage of this downtime. Think of it as a self-imposed retreat to do all of those things that you didn't have time to do before. All right, then. Thank you, listeners. I appreciate you, and you are the guests in my tank. And until next Wednesday, goodbye for now.